Hey everyone, welcome back to my podcast. This is the Contextual Insertion Project. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, and as usual, I'm joined by Tech Bertito.
Nostrovia.
So, election integrity and fraud and everything involving election stuff is definitely a hot topic now. In that vein, I wanted to kind of go back today and touch on a film that has really taken off on the right. It deals with a lot of the issues with election fraud, election, just, you know, the holes and the problems with their electoral system. It's called 2000 Mules. It's a film from conservative filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza. If you haven't seen this, I would suggest watching it, but just to give you an overview, it's basically Dinesh sits down with, it's dealing with the 2020 election, and it's dealing with various types of election fraud, and the title comes from basically a type of fraud that's reputed to involve mail-in balloting. If you remember the 2020 election, I mean, who doesn't forget 2020? I think most of us probably would like to forget it, but unfortunately it's seared in most of our brains by now. Yeah, with COVID and everything going on, there was a lot of stuff where secretaries of state, predominantly Democratic secretaries of state, would a lot of times without any form of authorization from the legislature, which supposedly is supposed to take lead on any changes to the state's election system. They started doing things like allowing mass mail-in balloting, lots of, you know, where you could just, they would mail ballots out to people. Like, we've always had this sort of thing where you could do absentee voting, you could show up in most states and, hey, I can't be here on election day for various reasons, and they would give you a ballot and you would, like, fill it out and leave it there, or you could request a mail-in ballot. Well, they just started, there's lots of changes where, like, they would just, they just presumptively started mailing, depending on the state, they started mailing ballots out to every registered voter. California's been really bad about this. They mailed it, they just, like, when I lived there, I would open up my post office box, and the mailbox was just, like, slap full of ballots from everyone who ever lived in my apartment. So it was a terrible voter roll. It was not accurate, not up to date. And what happens is, anyway, so basically 2020 brought something that was very similar to the California electoral system to most of the country. And what Dinesh was exploring was, he was curious what was the degree to which, you know, groups would go out there and collect ballots and bring the ballots in. So there's kind of a disconnect, and, like, you know, I've worked a lot of elections and been involved in a lot of this process. If you've listened to my earlier podcasts on this stuff, there's a very strict chain of custody for ballots. When you show up at a vote center or a precinct and they generate a ballot for you, like, if it's pre-printed, or whether some places have it pre-printed, other places, like Maricopa, they actually print on demand, which is printers that make your ballot, which ended up leading to the big mess a couple weeks ago in the Maricopa elections. The reason for that is, in Maricopa at least, you can go to any vote center in the county, no matter where you live, and vote. So because you may live on the other side of the county, they have to generate a ballot for you. And your local races, like your school board races, your mayor races. So as you can imagine, there's, like, several thousand different potential configurations of ballots. So you simply cannot print a sufficient number of all of those ballots and pre-print them. You cannot pre-print them and deliver them to every vote center in the state or in the county. So they print up a custom ballot every time. So that's how that sort of works here. But one of the things, too, is you can also, you know, request a mail-in ballot, and a lot of states are like this now. And depending on the state, there's different laws around that. Like, you can, in California, you can basically, ballot harvesting is legal, which is where you can basically get together a group of people, knock on doors, and you're like, hey, I want to pick up your ballot for you. We'll drop it off. You can be, it's just completely, incredibly permissive. Other places, you know, like in Arizona, you have to be a family member or a resident with them to pick up a mail-in ballot, or you're supposed to. Resident of their home. You have to be, like, a live with them, or you be your family, your immediate family member. But what I'm trying to say with all of this sort of stuff is, there's a massive disconnect between the security and the chain of custody for what we do at the vote centers versus the mail-in ballots. Like, you know, when you go to a vote center, and we generate these ballots for people, we have to log all of these ballots. Like we have special ballot paper that's blank, and we have to log that every day, and those numbers have to gel. There's numbers on the printer, there's numbers on the tabulator. All these numbers have to make sense. And there's also the check-in numbers from everyone who checked in. Like I can't go in there and just randomly print up a bunch of ballots and stuff the ballot box with them because those numbers have to make sense. People have to come in, they have to be identified, they have to show their driver's license. They have to be identified, they have to scan in, they have to check in on the electronic system. They have to print a ballot, and all of this stuff, there's multiple checks, there's seals, anything during the voting process in the elect when you're voting in a vote center, anything that's out of the ordinary, if we have to open up any box or anything like that, open up any sort of tabulator system, it requires at least two people, and they have to be from opposite parties. And observers, like poll observers from the parties, are allowed to come over and watch it whenever you're doing something. So there's tons of checks and balances in the vote center. And versus the mail-in, which you're just simply mailing the stuff out to people, to anyone who's ever requested it, and they're allowed, there's no real check on who fills these ballots out and who drops them in the mailbox. And that was just incredibly ironic to me, is because you're sitting in our vote center and people are coming in, dropping off their mail-in ballots. You're not allowed to ask them for ID. You're not allowed to, like, hey, can you sh does your ID match your name on your thing? You're not allowed to do that. You're allowed to just ask them, hey, make sure you sign it and date it, before they drop it in. But you're not allowed to challenge them. And this is there's no security around that.
And
But then, go ahead.
that's for boxes at voting centers,
Yeah, for the boxes,
for
voting center.
unattended voting boxes.
Yeah,
What kind of security protocols are there?
there's like, well, it's basically that there's none. But the thing is, there's really none. There's none at the vote center itself either. Like someone can walk in, like like literally, if someone's allowed to, if someone walks in with 100 fucking green ballots in a box and starts shoving them in our drop box, we're not allowed to like question that. And but here's the thing, the box in which they shove all the ballots, it has seals on it. The seals have serial numbers. There's a procedure to open that thing up when the couriers come to unload it.
Right.
So once it goes in the box, there is a serious, strict chain of custody.
And to be
But
clear
getting
with
it in the box, there's nothing.
Right. So to be clear, what we're saying about security of box is not that the box is insecure, not that the vote, no, not that the deposit boxes themselves are insecure. These are secure. There is no good evidence that there has been problems with such.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, that's what is outrageous to me, is like the fact is once it goes into the box, everything, including the box itself and everything downstream of the box, every step is tremendously detailed and the chain of custody is very strict. And that's what I'm like, some fucking rando walks in here and stuffs this thing with ballots. I have no idea where they got these ballots from. It's an honor system. Up until the point of getting ballots in the box, the drop box for like mail-in ballots, it's all honor system. Everything from the box downstream is incredibly like detailed and chain of custody.
Well, if I may, to relate it back to experience you've had in the real world and all this is the difference between the rallies you've been to where there's a strict police presence, they search everyone for weapons, they don't let anyone without weapons, they search, they do all these things and all this, and yet as soon as you leave, there is no escorts, there is no security mechanisms, there is no protection of cars, etc., etc. So you have this ironic thing where you enter a secured area and it's very secure from that, but getting there itself is a problem. And not to go into personal experience myself, but I think I can speak for both of us saying that we've encountered problems on the way to secured area.
Yeah, it's one of the things, I talk about it, there's a transition space around an event where it may be really secure within the event, but there's this empty zone around it where there's no security, and there's no security forces at all, and that's where all the most of the violent assaults happen. And that happens with political stuff, that happens like around fucking gas stations at 2 a.m. But there's something very similar to that with the way the electoral process works. With I don't believe some of the, there's a lot of weird beliefs around the election system, and some of them I think are a distraction. A lot of them are a distraction, but there are legitimate criticisms of them. And it's for me to see the way what we have to go through when once that green envelope falls into our Dropbox, there is a serious procedure downstream of that. But then. From the point right before it walks into our door to whenever it was mailed out, everything that happens at that point is on the honor system, and there's no proof or chain of custody for anything. And that's the sort of thing that really kind of really concerns me. And this is sort of the thing, this is really the part where Dinesh starts from. Basically, what they do is, you know, they get up with this election integrity group, and they get a bunch of cell phone data, and they start sifting through it, and they're looking for people that had traveled in the vicinity of a bunch of different drop boxes, and had also been to a bunch of left-wing nonprofits, and they also got a bunch of video camera footage from drop boxes, and were trying to film people, or they were trying to get government footage from, you know, FOI, Freedom of Information Act requests, and they were trying to look for people that were acting unusual on there. What they said was they found a bunch of different people, and it added up to around 2,000 people when they were trying to sift through all this data that had been to several nonprofit groups and had ended up showing up at a bunch of different Dropboxes, or at least been in the vicinity of it, according to their cell phone data. I think that's an interesting thing. And this is really, I think, this is where he starts the documentary off on. And I think it's really kind of the weakest thing. Because Dinesh is making a documentary for people that already kind of believe. And they're just looking for confirmation for stuff that they already believe. I think it's interesting stuff. But this is really, the problem with this is it's a pattern analysis issue. Like, he showed a generated map they had of an area with a route, and it showed this person had been by these nonprofits and had been by a bunch of drop boxes. But here's the issue with that. He doesn't show all the drop boxes that, like, it's not how many drop boxes the person went by. Because drop boxes are not random. Like, they're usually in these high, like, they put them in places where they're usually high traffic areas. They're near kind of, like, you know, choke points, like you can get off the highway really quick and drop off your mail, or it's by a mall or something. They're by these places where a lot of people go, and they're usually where roads meet, or they're where, you know, and nonprofits are like that too. They're not randomly placed either. Usually some part of downtown, or they're going to be in some sort of business sort of district. So it's one of those things, if you look at it uncritically, it looks like a smoking gun, but it's not really a question of what is the number of drop boxes or nonprofits you went by. It's more about, if you went randomly driving, how many drop boxes would you go by? Like, if you're doing election season and you just went out and drove a random path, how many drop boxes would you see or you would drive by? You'd probably drive by some just by pure luck. Okay. And that's really the sort of thing that kind of made me suspicious to start with. I'm like, I need to see more information than that, because it can't really, the cell phone data is not, it's not that accurate. What's going to show someone sitting right there? It's going to be someone who went in the vicinity. Like, he never covers, like, did they pause for like 2 or 3 minutes at each drop box? He just says they went by there. He doesn't actually clarify, were they specifically there? Did they stop for like 3 to 5 minutes? You know, there's nothing like that.
Right. And one other thing I think that's important, I will not represent myself as expert in targeting analysis, et cetera, et cetera. However, one of the things that this probably plays upon for preconceived notions and filling in blanks to complete auto-analysis complete, let's be clear. There's many global war on terror veterans, okay, in community, and there's many leftists, but when it comes to combat arms, they tend to vote more right wing. And so when it comes right down to it, right, you have understanding and analysis of targeting analysis, specifically things like CCTL, if I recall correctly, which is a clandestine I'm drinking, I can't remember. I can't remember acronym perfectly. It's a CTTL. It's a clandestine close tracking and logging. And this was a system that was put up by JSOC and later moved to other targeting. And basically, it was the idea of putting chips to track targets to get pattern of life analysis, which would then allow them to be Hellfires later. And then, of course, later drones themselves with increased with increased flyby times and increased duration in air could basically stay aloft and maintain basically visual analysis and maintain pattern of life, and then this would lead to things like signature strikes. I am starting to sound like you, getting into all details.
Yeah,
you know, something
I'm trying to avoid it.
But point is simply. I promise I make simple point here. There's many veterans and people in the military that are familiar with using cell phone signals to create signature strikes, which is something Obama did and has continued at least since then. And basically that is, based off cell phone data, this shows that this person has the life habits of a likely terrorist, and you can actually use for a Hellfire missile. There's several things wrong with this analysis, though. First off, this happens in a foreign country which has a lower standard of evidence than we need over here to convict for things. Second thing, and this is, I think, actually the most important one, is that for regular life. These are signal analysis around elections, which are not normal life. So people will, in fact, change the way they do things. If you have people that are, you know, there to watch polls, to watch drop boxes, that will change a cell phone signal. The election workers and people that are poll workers do not work elections, you know, outside a month from elections. So they will change their movements too. People checking on such things, community people too. So this, in fact, you know, this in fact ignores the fact that the election itself is a short duration thing, and this actually changes many other people's patterns of life. So that itself may also corrupt data, where people actually start to change their habits of movements specifically because of election, though not to steal election.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a good point. Like, so much of this pattern analysis stuff is really interesting. The problem with it is, by itself, it's not dispositive. It's not confirmation of anything. What you do when you use pattern analysis is you get a smaller group of people to sift through. It's not proof of anything by itself.
Right.
And that's really the frustrating thing. I was getting endlessly frustrating watching this documentary because he never actually shows any primary evidence himself. Like the data analysis stuff they do, they computer generate a map, but it's not a real map of the data they have.
Right.
It's just an illustration of the sort of thing they're looking at. And they're kind of treating it like it was the real data, but it's very clearly it's a staged generated type of thing, and they're trying to use it as an example to explain what the data is. I'm like, I don't want you to tell me what the data is. Let me look at the data myself, and I want to see myself what it is, what you have. And that's one of the things that was very consistent throughout this first part of the documentary, was it was like he'd give you some sizzle, but there was no steak.
Well, and so one of the things, of course, that is claimed is there was no direct evidence of one person visiting multiple drop boxes with ballots each time. Mm-hmm. Same person, different drop box, more ballots.
Yeah,
this is no smoking gun here.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing too. Just to harp on that, but they said they got 4 million minutes of footage from a bunch of different drop boxes. Do you know how many people they showed? How many times they showed the same person visiting different drop boxes? Zero. They did not show a single person on footage that they could conclusively link to more than one drop
box.
They
excuse this by saying that not all drop boxes had cameras there.
But you got 4 million minutes.
Okay.
Surely you'd have one or two. That's all you need.
Fine. Issue is, let's... this is not to just dissect. There's many NPR articles in prep for this. Was sort of course reading many people's takedowns, generally from left, of course, of this. I don't need to do a leftist takedown essentially of 2,000 mules. The point is this. That might be a very good point, actually, that you could not see other drop boxes because the most likely ones where a mule would do this. Let's give most credible analysis, right? That that drop box A and drop box B are the two most likely to be paired for a mule to do this kind of stuff, or they actually figure out a route or whatever, and so they know that they can drop off at you know, drop box A, and drop box B doesn't have a camera, and they will be on camera at A, not at B, and so then they can do that, and they'll be tradecraft secure. Fine. Let's say this is true. Issue then becomes about creating a lobby for, this is why cameras need to be a thing. This is why there needs to be someone at the drop boxes verifying and checking people's IDs and logging these things. So there's accountability and there's this kind of thing. Or suing for lack of election procedure. Or creating essentially ability to be held accountable. And very simply, I think we can sort of both agree on this. One of the major issues with right is when the right sees something that works for the left, they say, "Ooh, that's a shiny tactic of left. Let us take it. Let's adopt it and make it a right wing thing." And it's the idea that you know, you see someone else using a sword when you're using an axe. You see the sword is more efficient, so then you just copy the sword and you say, "Look, I have sword too," and you use sword. Issue is this: you're still swinging sword like you swing axe. It is not efficient, and you end up getting gutted and killed.
Well,
because
so much of it too is like when the right talks about using left wing tactics, they're not actually talking about the real tactic. They have a fantasy about what the tactic actually is. They have a false idea of how the left does it. And then, and that's another big part of it. Just to jump in here too, and like, I kept like thinking, wow, they're going to pull out a smoking gun here, and then they just veer to something else. Like, my biggest frustration was the South Carolina lady that they claim. Like,
with the gloves.
With the gloves, yeah. They have a lady who comes up in Georgia, and she drops off a bunch of mail-in ballots. And, yeah, maybe like a six or so or something they have. And she's wearing gloves. And she turns around and throws the gloves in the trash. And this happened like the day after someone was arrested in Arizona, I think, for voter fraud. And they caught them because they had fingerprints on the ballots. And they're like, this lady's from South Carolina. She came down here during the primary and she came down here during the general. No, they said she came down during the general election and then the runoff. She came down from South Carolina. I was like, holy shit, this is cool. This is great. And then they just stopped talking about it. And that was the thing. I'm like, this would have been, okay, you know the lady's from South Carolina. Or at least in your own words, this lady is without a doubt from South Carolina. You've got her cell phone data traveling. Why the fuck don't, like, that would be the perfect thing there would be one of those on-the-street interviews where you, like, jump out of a bush with a camera in front of the lady and you're like, we just caught you on camera voting illegally in Georgia. Do you have any comments? And then, like, chasing her down the street as she's, like, running. They could have had such fucking Kino footage right there. Like, you say you caught a person unequivocally being a ballot mule voting illegally. You could have had some really hot footage of, like, chasing someone down the street, someone being arrested because you just called the police and the feds fucking come in and arrest her. There's so much cool shit you could have done with that. But then you just left it. They just fucking left it. They didn't pursue it anymore. And I'm like, I want to see more about that. Like, that would have been banger. Right.
Or to follow up and prove it's not. But the issue then becomes a question of is it mere sort of incompetence not doing this or a lack of budget? Though again, $2 million was spent to acquire cell phone data and stuff.
Like surely they can get a good. If you spent that much on cell phone data, surely you can send a group of private investigators to find this woman. And get information on her. Because, yeah, if she's getting paid to do this, find out, like, who the groups that paid her are. Dig into her life. There's so much. That was a thread right there they could have pulled
which
unraveled the whole thing.
And you know, and again, issue is, you know, if not, that's fine. But issue becomes more, you know, is this just, you know, was this sort of incompetence or a lack of, was this incompetence from not doing this way? And, like, you know, why are they so incompetent at doing these things or lack of funding? Or, and this is actually much more, I think, more likely than incompetence, you have to then attribute, is this an eternal conservative impulse to pull punches, to not go for throat, to not go for individual, to actually go for it, to actually prove things through, to actually be mean, to perhaps ruin someone's life, to send them to prison because that would be wrong, or is it a lack of confidence in your own production? Like, what leads to lack of actually following up in such way? Like, why would this be? If it's not incompetence, then what else might it be? You know, is it simply the slave mentality, essentially, that, you know, to Nietzsche, not any woke stuff? Is it the mentality that you simply can't win, you can't use tactics, you have to be a respectable conservative, blah 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 blah, you can't use power, you can't use state? Why, if this is the issue that you have, would you not do this? And, you know, is it in fact failure to believe your own self and to believe in the righteousness of your cause? This becomes more interesting question for me, really.
Yeah, it does. Like, the thing for me is, like, someone who's been involved in film production and stuff and all these sorts of things. You know, I can bag on Dinesh for a bunch of different reasons. But, you know, you get to that sort of position by having a sense of, you know, chasing down. You know, you don't get there by missing up easy layups. So I almost want to presume that it's just he specifically avoided, you know, tugging these questions better, or exploring them better because of, he didn't think it would work out for him. Maybe he was kind of some bullshitting, or maybe he just thought he would get crushed or something for doing it because he wants to be a loser. It's more fun to be the out party. I don't know. It's like it's one of those things of I just can't think that a group of people will be sitting around like that and go, oh, let's not explore these questions. Let's not find out who this lady is.
Well, what's really confusing, right, is that Dinesh D'Souza did in fact promise that in book version of 2,000 Mules, he would actually name the organizations, he would actually do these things, and so people were very looking forward to it. And I think NPR had something about a new book, and then a book then was recalled in the middle of publishing to actually remove names of organizations for threats of I believe libel is spoken, so I believe it's slander is written, or no, it's the opposite. Libel's written, slander's spoken. So I believe there is credible fear of libel for going after organizations which of course have money and such like this. And so they removed these things, they removed other things from things I didn't have a chance to read. Supposedly NPR had advanced version, it could say, but still wouldn't name organizations, interestingly chosen. So there is in fact media blackout on which organizations it is instead of open sourcing it, which is an interesting thing. But like this is a point, the point is that you have NPR that's able to get an advance copy anyways to say these kinds of things, to tip off organizations that they're being watched by Dinesh D'Souza and by such things. And so they're going to use unfair tactics. They're going to kneecap you. They're going to be able to do things that are unfair and impossible and stuff like that. And so it is war. If you do believe that these are stolen votes, then of course your enemy will stop at nothing. They already didn't stop at laws. They already stole things. I mean, if you found a thief who's like, if you've stumbled upon the thief with 14 dead bodies, that they've cannibalized and done all sorts of serial killer things to, and they find you there, do you really think that the pleading with him for your life and saying that he won't tell anyone will work? I mean, you found multiple convicted murderer. Of course he's going to murder you. So if you find some people that have stolen millions upon millions of votes or whatever, or tens of thousands of votes, but stolen the presidential election, do you think they're going to come clean, say, all shucks, Scooby-Doo, I guess you got me, I guess I give up? Or are they going to double down and be like Sam Bankman-Fried and just continue to say that, no, everything's fine, I'm getting my sleep by playing League of Legends and stuff like this. The money would come back if people just believed in me.
Yeah, it's massively disappointing to me on all these levels, and I wish there'd been so much more here, because once we this is where he starts off the documentary, and it really kind of left me underwhelmed, and I felt like once he started to shift into other stuff that it actually got much more meaty,
Right, the end of the
and
film,
that's what's frustrating
the
about
end of film, it was a very
it.
Strong point. It was talking to a guy who, from his, quite frankly, and I don't mean to sound like one of you capitalists that's so classist and such like this, but you could tell from demeanor, you could tell from office, you could tell from appointments that he chose and stuff like this. He wasn't merely a rich person. He was well off, who had sort of taste and had professionalism to him. And so he starts enumerating things that happened. So, for instance, we're talking about Zuckerberg, and Zuckerberg in the 2020 election provided hundreds of millions of dollars to increase voter accessibility initiatives. But there were several things that you had to do to get the funding, much like the NPR drives, where you hear that if you contribute $10 for the next step for the next hour, they have a matching contribution, so your contribution will be worth $30, because every $10 contributed, there's a donor that will give $20, but only for the next hour, so contribute now, kind of thing. Zuckerberg had clauses, right, to qualify for money, including things like multiple languages on ballots and stuff like this, and other things like that to qualify for funds. And so the guy made the point that, well, very simply, it doesn't take rocket science to say that, it doesn't matter ethnicity, doesn't matter race so much, but if it's a ballot in a different language, this leans heavily Democratic. And while it has veneer of increasing voter accessibility, it really increases number of Democratic votes. And while it's supposed to be nonpartisan, and several other ways of essentially gaming system, and these are incredibly important because we're talking about the razor thin margins. We're talking something like less than 11,000 or something like that in Arizona 2020 election. I
Yeah, it
forget
was
the
like
rest.
the total. You could have flipped the 2020 election, depending. Like, you would have to know exactly where they needed to be, but you could have flipped the 2020 election with around 44,000 votes, distributed around the country in strategic areas. Not saying that's what happened. I'm not saying that there was some, supercomputer in the Vatican doing that shit. I'm just simply pointing out this was a very close election. And that's what was so ultimately frustrating. It's like there was so many good points in this documentary. He just, he started off, I think it started off very weak. The beginning started off weak, and it was not the slam dunk that it needed to be. It wasn't a strong opening. But then once he started to move from specific claims about what happened with these mules to the issues with the mail-in voting system, the fundamental problems with it, how ballot harvesting happens in other states like California, some of the things that people do with mail-in ballots that, can use to be game the system. And then after that, that was really strong. And then I think when he got to the funding system, when he started talking about Arabella Advisors, which is that big, massive, dim clearinghouse, it's a donor clearing. It's a group that's an advisor group. It tells a lot of these big corps and extremely wealthy people. It helps them determine where to send their philanthropic donations. But it's also one of the things it does. It operates like five different funds that they control, and these funds are used almost like a mixer in cryptocurrency. They're used to kind of launder the funds and then send the funds out to different. So you can't say, "Hey, Bill Gates, you gave $10 million to Drag Queen Story Hour in like Texas." There's no direct linkage like that. They send the money to the funds, and then the funds split up the fund. The funds themselves, the nonprofits, split up the money, send them to the other funds, and it's all mixed together. So you can't do a direct linkage between one person, between one donor, and then one specific thing. It's used to kind of launder all this money, so you can't hang it on someone's neck. And that is a really interesting, like, I've heard of them before, and I've talked about them before, and it's an interesting group that does a lot of left-wing fundraising. They're linked to the Clintons. A lot of the Clinton administration people are involved with it. So it's definitely a serious dim fundraiser. And I thought that was a really powerful way to finish the documentary. It was just, for me, it was like underwhelming at the beginning because I've worked in elections for so long, and I look at things, I try to second guess stuff, and I just felt like Dinesh had so many times he had like a home run, like just a layup, and he just didn't take it.
Right. Well, and
And that was in the beginning, but once he got past that, I felt it got to be a much stronger documentary.
right. And one of the problems, this is one of the things you must understand, is problem with essentially mounting defense, or with essentially counting their left if you're from the right, or even not left or right, but if as an outside party trying to counter inside party. Alex Jones was at trial, and he was asked by judge, do you really believe the Pizzagate, that there are billionaires that are raping kids around the world and doing this in pizza parlors? He said, well, Epstein was doing such things, and there was no answer to this, and in fact didn't enter minds that there was in fact a billionaire or centimillionaire who owns private islands, flying people flying all sorts of VIPs to on private jets, doing these things. It doesn't even enter these people's brains. It's not even a negative kind of thing. It's that they don't connect that Pizzagate is a crazy conspiracy theory talking about eating children and stuff like that, with in fact that there are high profile people that engage in mutual blackmail rings that have been proven again and again to exist. But they don't link these two. They don't link that Dennis Hastert was Speaker of House, and that he actually had been was likely being blackmailed at the time as Speaker of House for molesting boys and all this. These things aren't allowed to be connected, because it would in fact cause negative things. So the thing is, all right, if you make a crazy claim, then that crazy if you make a crazy claim, it allows the you know if you get everything right, but you add one crazy claim on, you say, there was a guy who was interviewed. He showed me the gun. He showed me the he showed me the ballistics, and he shows the travel receipts of being in Daley Plaza on the grassy knoll on the day that JFK was shot. And then it has all this stuff, all this amazing stuff. And then offhandedly you mention there also, and he also swore that there was a UFO there that dropped him off. then entirely all the investigations will focus on the one claim of the UFO and all this kind of stuff. They'll completely ignore evidence of the ballistics. They'll completely ignore evidence of the travel receipts. They'll completely ignore all the other evidence. And so the issue then is you then basically do a great job, actually, of burying legitimate evidence, and giving press and giving other things an ability to bury it by being able to focus on one crazy claim and not focus on the more robust ones. And so the more robust things, right, to focus on are not unproven, which is, this is a factual thing to say. It's unproven about the mules. There is no video or photographic evidence of one person visiting multiple things. There's suggestive evidence of cell phone data, but no smoking gun of this. There is smoking gun of the way that, again, the Democrats admitted to fortifying the 2020 election through the AFL-CIO. There is proven Arabella advisors. There is proven Zuckerberg funding of elections to increase voter accessibility, to get non-English speakers voting in all this. And furthermore, you even have even more evidence that in Florida, Ron DeSantis got rid of these things. He got rid of foreign funding of outside funding for elections, not allowing outside money to come in because of the likelihood of this kind of putting the thumb on the scale. And then you look at the election result of Florida. Is it as sexy as saying there are individuals, there are paid agents working for the Antifa industrial complex that are harvesting ballots and getting paid and making millions of dollars doing this? No, that is not sexy. I admit, that is a very sexy conspiracy theory to sell. It's as much less sexy to say, well, there are people creating rules and figuring out ways to carve a percentage point here, to add another 500,000 voters in these states off of this one, and to increase the probability that someone that never learned English will vote in a presidential election, and this shows a 70-30 split in favor of Democrats. That is a lot less sexy, I admit, but that is actually how power politics in most cases is played and won, is off of the unsexy things. Frankly, when it comes right down to it, you don't want a banker doing sexy things with your money, with your investing and all that. You want someone that's sober and going for sober returns. You don't want them investing in FTX.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think that's we're gonna cut this one a little short today. This is gonna be a quick quit hit. But yeah, no, I think that was a really great way to wrap up kind of an assessment of 2,000 mules, was what you said. Is like, you can have great stuff, but if you fall short or you have like some wacky points, it that kind of starts to discredit everything else. And that's really kind of what I felt, because yeah, I'm like, dude, it's like, I was so frustrated because I'm like, man, there's so many great layups here. He just needs to grab the ball and run with it. And then they just don't care. Then it goes into, and that was the beginning, and it just pisses me off. And then you get to the part where it's like, wow, this is like, the mule stuff is very uneven and very unpersuasive, but then he gets to he talks about the bigger problems with mail-in voting. Those are bangers. Those are legitimate good points. Then he talks about Arabella advisors, the networks, and all the funding that went into this stuff. Those are all really great, solid points. That opening, though, really left me kind of underwhelmed.
Well, and just last point, and further thing, if you actually did want to investigate, say, Glove Lady, who crossed state lines to do these kinds of things and do that kind of stuff, if you don't immediately investigate, if you don't hand this off to someone that can do this, and whether or not law enforcement would be involved, you try to hand that off to a Project Veritas, someone else like that that's outside.
Yeah, Project Veritas would be great for that.
Yeah, if you don't hand it off to that, what that means is that gives more time to cover up, that gives more time to get stories straight and all this kind of stuff. It gives more time to do that, and you actually have to be willing to do stuff immediately, quickly, and essentially have those kinds of things. And perhaps it means that ultimately you can't sell film as easily because there's a longer term investigation. But then this, of course, is where donors and other sort of institutional funding really would be well spent on the right, instead of trying to create policy papers and other things like that, convincing people that disagree with you. If you actually then had donors that were like, you know what, we actually will fund for ability to, instead of trying to sell documentary quickly and then maybe letting people get away because you don't have it, and you do need to make money because we do live in capitalist system. As many problems as I have with capitalist system as deceased communist leader, You know, you live in a capitalist system if you don't have it funded. I understand these things, but this is where, in fact, having institutional funding would be necessary, would be good. So instead of the focus being on selling a film and having it break even like that, if instead you actually did have institutional things, if you did have that where it says, you know what, you don't need to make money off of it, because if the right managed to actually prove people stealing votes and doing these kinds of things, it would create a moral basis. It would create a moral basis for action, actually, that would allow the right to contest, expanding mail-in voting, would create a right to contest these things. It would create a moral basis to actually contesting these things across states. Because at this point, very simply, unless you can actually, put some big names, you can put some big names and some proven things and some proven ways that these things are being insecurely run. Unless you do that, there is no chance of getting a policy change of changing election procedures to make them more secure.
And with that, that's our thoughts on 2,000 Mules. It's worth checking out, just with the caveats that we talked about here. And of course, I'm always interested in y'all's opinions as well of the film as well. So let me know what you think. And until next time, y'all take care. This has been Aaron, and this has been Tech Bro.
Nastroluvia.